Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Go follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, it was Du Bon Voyage for one Houston fan favorite. We'll talk about what we think Houston will do with their newfound savings, and just as importantly, when. And the Astros have hired a new offensive coordinator. Do you think he knows how to implement the run? Asking for another Houston team. Before all that, if you're a Houston Texans fan, be sure to catch our other podcast, Texans on Tap, right here on YouTube. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. So ahead of Friday's non-tender deadline, Houston tendered contracts to all their arbitration-eligible players, with the exception of the ones we had already covered, and Mauricio Dubon, who they traded to the Braves for infielder Nick Allen. So between Arias, Dubon, McCormick, and Garcia, Houston will capture close to $16 million in savings based on arbitration projections. Now, Dubon was a fan favorite, and the hardcore fans reacted pretty negatively from what I saw. I like him. I think the team obviously liked him, but they value the financial flexibility more, as Jim Crane is reportedly trying to get below the CBT while also addressing the needs of the team, which is, sing along if you know the words, starting pitching and a lefty bat. What do you think about the moves, and was there anything that surprised you, Charlie?
Let's start with Dubon, which evidently evoked a pretty high level of emotional response for a guy who was a brilliant glove and a deadweight bat. This was a simple salary dump. So those who love Dubon's acting chops, replacing Bregman and or Tucker in the supermarket commercials, it'll be okay. They'll get someone to replace him. He had almost 400 plate appearances last season, and those were wasted. I mean, Dubon the last 2 years, an absolutely terrible offensive player. Now, maybe the new hitting coach regime would have addressed something that always annoyed me with Dubon, because there's the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Dubon's offense was broke. He's never been a good offensive player. He's a very wiry guy, and I have appreciation for wiry guys, but not when I'm paying them $5 million and their turns in the batter's box are largely a waste of time. But he had a horrible habit that his back foot would slide out behind him routinely. It saps your power immediately. When you have very little to begin with, I don't know if Cintron, Snitker, minor league coaches, he came from the Giants organization, if anyone ever tried to work with him on that. Ultimately, and we'll see with the Astros' new hitting gurus, you can lead a horse to the batter's box, but you can't make him hit. So Dubon, by every account, a delightful guy. Any off-field feature you saw him in, just a very engaging guy. And marvelous with the glove, just won his second gold glove. But that did not override the offensive liability in an Astros lineup that had too many of them. And to carry him at likely near $6 million in salary arbitration. Now, the guy they traded him for, Nick Allen, I feel like I could beat him up. 5'8", 165, talk about no power. He damn near makes Dubon look like Jeremy Pena offensively. Career batting average, 213. Matched his career high batting average with the Braves, 221. His career OPS as a big leaguer in a little over 1,000 at-bats, 523. 563. Something fives. Frame of reference time. Martin Maldonado, kind of the poster boy for, oh my God, this guy's terrible. Career OPS for Maldonado, 620. Allen, not even close to that. He was a gold glove finalist at shortstop with the Braves. Here, he'll purely be Pena's caddy, Altuve at second base. He'll get the odd start here if he even winds up on the team. But Allen projects to make about $1.5 million. Dubon was going to make nearly quadruple that. So we need to wait for the other baseball spike to drop. How do the Astros reallocate the funds that they save by downgrading, certainly offensively, which is a bizarre sentence to say, from Dubon to Nick Allen?
Yeah, I'm just going to go off of Dana Brown's comments recently that they're going to move Correa over to shortstop, it sounds like, when Pena's not able to go to spell him. And if that's the case, and remember last year, Correa just kind of wanted to focus on third base. And for the most part, he did last year after the trade, except for an appearance there, here or there. But if that's the plan, then you don't need to pay Dubon all that money to give Pena a day off when you can slip him over there. And you got Paredes, it looks like, going to be DHing quite a bit. They're talking about Yordan playing a bunch of left field, which means Altuve is going to be at second base. So there's just really no need to do that. And Charlie's right. Like, Nick Allen, my Lord, he's awful. I mean, that guy cannot hit, but that's not why they're bringing him here. So it makes a lot of sense to me. They're just trying to upgrade the offense, which is a good thing. It desperately needs it. They were so focused on defense last year with that moving Altuve and being more excited about Christian Walker at first base than in the batter's box, which was just crazy to me. I know he's been a gold glover, but you're bringing him in because you thought he could hit 30 home runs and you have the Crawford boxes. That's the main appeal. So yeah, if you're going to go this route, then Dubon was a piece that, thank you for everything you did, we love you, Doobie, but he's not a good fit anymore. They have bigger needs to address, so they're going to try something else. I think it's the right move.
It's the money. In a vacuum, you'd rather have Dubon than Allen on your roster. A 536, by the way, the career OPS for Nick Allen. Again, Martin Maldonado, 620. Nick Allen, 536. He'd need an upgrade to be a 98-pound weakling in the batter's box. Dubon goes to a Braves team with a hole at shortstop. He might wind up getting some regular time there. Good for him. This is not tragic, Dubon lovers. It also, two things. One, when the Astros DFA'd Urias, right, Dubon was the choice there, but said last week he would still be tradable for minimal return, but they wouldn't necessarily be stuck with that salary. It's not going to excite anyone if the Dubon money is reallocated to keeping Jesus Sanchez around. But this is another reminder that Bryce Matthews should be ready for the major leagues. He was drafted in the first round as a shortstop, turns 24 in spring training, played a whole season at AAA. If he's not ready to be a fill-in shortstop, second baseman, outfielder, huge disappointment for Dana Brown's first-round draft pick running the Astros.
You know, Charlie, when we're talking about the money, critics of the move say that if you're trying to capture salary, why absorb back $1.5 million of money for a guy who may not play much, if at all, he may not make the club, and that there are cheaper defensive only solutions, options out there. How do you respond? Because they didn't have to make this move. It could have gone like they did with Urias and just DFA him. Why do you think they made this move?
They could wind up doing that with Allen. I mean, it's not as if it's optically great. See, we got a return from Mauricio Dubon. And whether it's Correa, Allen, unless Pena has an injury, you're talking 10 starts filling in for him. Jeremy Pena's a 150-game starter unless he cracks a rib or has some sort of other issue. Right? He's 28 years old. He should not need regular rest as opposed to Altuve, who should be sitting at least once per week. But $1.5 million, anyone who's been in the major leagues for any period of time, I mean, that's about the minimum. The actual minimum next season's $780,000. You pay Bryce Matthews $510,000 more than that. And we'll hear, well, we want Bryce Matthews getting everyday playing time. He just played a full season in AAA and came on the second half of the season. He'll be 24 in spring training. If he's a real significant prospect, he should be ready to at least be in the major leagues, and he should start at second base a couple of days per week and be your fill-in for Pena at short and get a look in the outfield if no one is hitting out there. But that does not appear to be in the offing, at least heading to spring training.
No, and you know, for Dana, it's at least you got something. And like Charlie said, you're not paying him very much money. I think part of this, too, is kind of like the Texans have done. Hey, you've been a good soldier, Dubon. We're going to send you to a quality franchise, give you an opportunity to play, a fan favorite. They're not just dumping him or sending him to some terrible organization. They're sending him somewhere that he could have some success. So I think that might be part of it.
Of course, if they DFA'd him, he could have picked his own team. Yeah. But they do at least, Josh, send him to a play. Braves had an injury-destroyed team. But they're thought to be a potential big bounce-back team in 2026 with much better health. That kind of sounds familiar. So best of luck to Dubon. But look, this simply is not a big loss for the Astros. This is a very bad offensive player who won't be consuming nearly 400 plate appearances again.
Indeed. And going back to the original question, I don't think any of these moves surprised me per se. I am a little surprised. I thought they would either keep Urias or Dubon. So them essentially moving both of them was a little surprising. What will surprise me is if we don't see some other departures imminent via trade. And speaking of that, we've seen other teams already making moves. Rangers swapped Semien for Brandon Nimmo. Red Sox traded for Sonny Gray. Houston's got some money now. They've captured some savings here with the dead money falling off the books and moving away from Urias and Dubon and the others that we mentioned. When do you think we see Dana Brown pull the trigger on something, shall we say, significant?
The winter meetings are the week after next, as you alluded to, Brandon. Some teams did not wait around. An interesting contract swap. The Rangers get a guy who's been a clearly better offensive player the last 2 years in Brandon Nimmo relative to Marcus Semien, but it's a trade down defensively. The Rangers save salary cap money, if you will, $4 or $5 million in the near term, that they take on a $100 million total obligation over 5 years, as opposed to Semien, 3 years, $72 million. It's just not a game changer for the Rangers, but their offense, so awful. They DFA'd Adolis Garcia, so Astros fans need not worry about him tormenting them as a Ranger anymore. The one on its face mildly surprising decision was in cutting the cord with both of your utility-type guys and tendering Jesus Sanchez, who was just a disaster with the Astros. You take out that 1 5-for-5 fluke game he had in Baltimore, and he hit 170 in his 2 months with the Astros. The 5-for-5 game brought him in at 199, still just under the Mendoza line. He wasn't just a job. He was an adventure in the outfield. But 2 points. Career OPS for Jesus Sanchez against right-handed pitching, 774. That would play. There's no reason to think Jacob Melton would do that. There's no reason to think Zach Cole would do that. And there's no reason to think, off what he did the last 3 months of last season, that Cam Smith is ready to do that as a full-time player. So a Smith-Sanchez platoon, where Sanchez would be the majority playing time guy, you face more right-handed pitching than left-handed pitching, if he reverts to his career numbers. And that 774 includes the fetid stink bomb stats that he compiled with the Astros. Or at $6 million, he's still tradable on his own once the free agent and trade market settles a little bit and the team's caught short for an outfielder. For the same reason, he could still wind up a piece of the Astros outfield puzzle. There'll be another team saying, you know, on a one-year hit at $6 million, we'll take a shot that he gets back to where he was with the Marlins. So the Astros can have some flexibility there if they want to shake loose a few more million. At this point in time, they're a little over $25 million in working room, whether it's for one bold move with a pitcher or to split that in half. Remember, backup catcher must be addressed. Caratini is a free agent. Whether it's giving him a raise and bringing him back if he's interested or needing a replacement, Yiner's not playing 150 games behind a plate.
Yeah, I think for Dana, too, doesn't look great that the guy you traded for at the deadline just played so poorly once he joined your ball club, and then you just straight let him go after that, after you gave up resources. I know they didn't give up the farm or anything like that, but it's just, it's not a good look. Plus, all new hitting coaches, new offensive coordinator. Maybe they're thinking we can turn him around with a new approach. So I think that might be part of it. And yeah, you could still trade him if you want. And then the other thing, Brandon, you brought up the lefty bat. He's a lefty bat. It'd probably be easier to try and coach something out of him because you know it's in there. He's done it before. So maybe take a shot at getting a new message around him and see if something happens before you get rid of him. And then you try and go look for another lefty bat. And we've already heard Dana Brown. Doesn't sound like you're super confident Cam Smith is going to be your right fielder. So, you know, maybe this is just a numbers game. They have both these guys come out there and competition and see who wins the job.
Yeah. They're not offering Kyle Tucker $400 million for an emotional reunion or dropping down to a mere $150 to $200 million to bring Astros fan favorite Cody Bellinger in here, though he'd be a wonderful fit. So with the zero major league resume of competence for Jacob Melton, a couple long home runs and that's it for Zach Cole, Sanchez does have a big league resume predating the 2 months of with the Astros.
All right. So in contrast to the departures, Houston has some arrivals. We've mentioned the new hitting coaches. This includes a brand new position within the organization as Dan Hannigan is promoted to offensive coordinator. He was on Chandler Rome's podcast discussing the new position. What's intriguing about this new position is, based on Hannigan's description of the role, it sounds like he's been elevated to provide some strategic structure and alignment to how Houston approaches hitting. In his words, to build a repeatable, scalable process for how we prepare, how we can integrate different departments and make sure we're moving the needle with young guys. See Cam Smith. He didn't say that. That was me. And when asked about the one thing he and the new hitting coaches wanted to work on, he said he wanted there to be true conviction and purpose in every at bat, and for the team to be versatile. In other words, not just to be singularly focused with one approach at the plate on just being aggressive and being patient when the situation calls for it. And we heard Dana Brown talking about that during the last offseason. That all sounds good in theory. What were your reactions to the creation of the position, of this offensive coordinator position, and what Hannigan had to say about it?
Well, I think you hit the summary. Probably every hitting coach, offensive coordinator in modern baseball would espouse largely the same thing, right? You want to be intelligently aggressive and be prepared and have a quality approach, bat in, at bat in, at bat out. So the theory is fine. There's the saying, and in the end, it's the carpenter, not the tools. Right? The guys in the batter's box, how well they take to homework assignments and classroom theory. Sometimes it's just, are you a good enough hitter? Are you disciplined? And it's such a spectrum of guys, right? Cam Smith, young guy, started well, except for generally no power for a big, strong guy, and then just absolutely crashed and burned and belonged in the minor leagues. And maybe he'll wind up there during 2026 for at least a portion of it. But that's a young guy who they're thinking, well, he's a moldable lump of clay that we can sculpt into something really, really nice. Okay, at the other end of the spectrum, Jose Altuve, getting ready to turn 36 years old, always a free swinger, but never more so. Never more wildly chasing pitches way out of the strike zone to where he's in the worst 5% in Major League Baseball now and going after pitches not in the strike zone. Not as bad as Yiner Diaz, who's 9 years younger. So who do they tailor what approach to? How well do they take to it? It all sounds good, and then the bullets start flying.
It's been 2 years. The hitting coaches were given a mandate last year to get this figured out. It didn't happen. So Dana Brown, what's he going to do? You got to try something totally different here. And that's what they're doing. Bring in some new voices, some new approaches. And from what I heard from Josh Reddick on the Crush City podcast, he's familiar with Victor Rodriguez. He's more of just an old baseball hitting coach kind of style guy, not a guy that's going to break out the iPad and get into all the advanced stuff. That's not for him. So it makes sense that this other position can focus on that kind of stuff. And then you have some nice balance across all your different hitting coaches that can appeal to younger players and older players. And it just makes a lot of sense to me. And at this point, why not? What do you have to lose by trying some different guys? Because clearly what they've been doing has not been working the last couple of years. And to Charlie's point, I don't think Altuve is going to change his approach all that much. It's some of these other guys where you're hoping to make a difference. So especially with Yiner Diaz, my Lord, I mean, that guy swings at everything. If at least he's still young, that whole old dogs, new tricks kind of thing, maybe you can still find some ways to make some difference for Yiner to get him to take some more pitches. He's still a young ball player. So I think it's worth a shot. What do they have to lose? Like I said.
Yeah, I'm all for the moves and adding a layer of sophistication or counterbalance to the older school every day in the dugout hitting coach. But a healthy Yordan Alvarez will impact the Astros lineup, I believe, more than any sort of phalanx of hitting minds.
Yeah, agreed. And in theory, it sounds good. This should theoretically take workload off of the hitting coaches. Hannigan can coordinate the game plan and the options, and then the hitting coaches can just concentrate on mechanics and coaching in the cages. What was interesting to me was how he referenced the organization's, what he called a hitting Bible in the minor leagues, because in his words, there was no system. That could be why in recent years, we haven't seen as much development in the way of hitting in Houston's minor league system. that's also in addition to the farm being weak. So the structure they created there, he's essentially trying to replicate on the big league team. And what's encouraging to me is, Josh, what you talked about was he'll counterbalance that old school approach. He's talking about identifying options on the shapes and patterns of pitch shapes and pitch swings. That's not groundbreaking per se, but he's a biomechanics geek by all accounts. And this feels in this department, in this specific role, like a shift back towards the analytically based strategy that became so pervasive under the Lunau and Click era. So I like that aspect of it. Final thoughts before we jump out here.
Well, this Thanksgiving week, we should all be thankful for basically the last decade of Astros baseball, even with the tailoring off of the last couple of seasons. Beyond that, it feels like the dog days of pre-winter. But we're getting there. Those winter meetings open December 8th in Orlando. Maybe it won't wait until then. But what is the Astros' biggest move of this offseason to be? I think the hope from this standpoint is still that it's a starting pitcher that you're saying, okay, the odds favor getting a solid 160 innings plus out of him.
Yeah, and if we take Dana Brown at his word, I don't know why we waited so long. He's talking about giving Altuve more rest. Hallelujah. We went over this again and again, and at that age and all the at-bats he was taking, playing through injuries and being ineffective, what are we doing here? Let's figure this out. So I think we're going to see more Altuve at second base, more Paredes probably at DH. The surprising thing was more Yordan in left field. Not because he can't do it, just because you're so worried he's going to hurt himself, but I think they're going to be a little more flexible here and give these guys some more time off. And I think that's the right move. But yeah, they got to get more pitching. The starting pitcher will be key. We'll see what they do. Verlander's still a possibility. I've heard some people that are down on the Verlander, you know, acquisition if it happens. I get it. He's 43, but there is precedent. Nolan Ryan had some really good seasons in his 40s, 43, 44, 45, starting well into the 20s amount of games, ERAs in the threes and twos. So it has been done before. I'm not saying Verlander's Nolan Ryan, but if you're going to compare anybody to Nolan Ryan, I think Verlander's pretty fair.
Well, Verlander's had a greater career, all things considered, than Nolan Ryan. Oh, no! Strike him dead! We can discuss it at another time. Roger Clemens, I mean, whatever you want to make of it. 42, 43 as a Houston Astro. Pretty freaking awesome. And Verlander after the All-Star break, I'd be wary about him holding up and giving you the 29 starts that he did for the Giants. They should have a little bit more money than Verlander will command, but he'd also be just a one-year deal. And let's remember, not only are they going to want to stay under the number, they're going to want to stay under it enough to have some dry powder to assess within the season when that trade deadline comes around, because, you know, Jim Crane would really, I mean, he authorized going over it to his credit, but if you go over it a third time, it costs you more in terms of the tax that you pay and draft implications, unless at the end of the season, the whole thing blows up and the new CBA, who knows what the rules will be. And well, maybe in 2027, we're just twiddling our thumbs all season saying, where's baseball? What are those Stone Cold Strohs going to do every week?
Well, getting back to the theme of Thanksgiving, I was getting my car inspected over the weekend, and it turned out the shop owner is a Stone Cold Strohs fan. And so we talked about Strohs for probably 20 minutes before I left. So it's always fun to run into viewers, listeners in the wild. So just want to thank everyone who listens to the show, supports the show, whether it's subscribing to the podcast or liking the videos. Pass. Yes, I did pass, and I'll consider that his contribution to the Buy Me a Coffee. But I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who subscribes, likes the videos, who watches us. If you haven't subscribed yet, we know there's still a bunch of you out there who watch and don't subscribe. I don't know what that's about. I don't know if you just rely on the algorithm to deliver it to you. But hey, it really does help. But you know, if you don't, you're still free to consume it. But You should subscribe. It's free. And again, for those that have supported the show monetarily via buymeacoffee.com/StoneColdStrohs, however you consume, however you support, we really do appreciate it as independent content creators. If you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Reminder for Texans fans, be sure to subscribe to our other podcast, Texans on Tap, as we'll be rolling that out. And we're live after every game. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. As always, Go Strohs.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.